going on out there, everybody? And thanks so much again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Uncle Ham. And of course, as always, beating the heat and making his way in here is Big Fizzy.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios. Excited about today's show. I know that this week is one of your favorite weeks of the summer. And the reason I say that is because it's Shark Week.
And everybody lets me know. Inundated with messages.
People know that you have a love for sharks and of the ocean and swimming and bobbing in the ocean.
Yeah.
So every year, you know, of course they re-air previous year's shows. So like Air Jaws and stuff. I've seen that 40 times. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But they always have new ones. And I was eating a sandwich the other day and it was on in the background. So I was kind of checking it out. It was a new one, one I hadn't seen. And they keep pushing the limit. So in the beginning, they would just chum the water and try to get like sharks to come up out of the water and you could punch their nose or rub them or whatever you wanted to do. Then it got to, we're going to start towing people behind the boat wakeboarding.
They were towing the fake seal and they get them to breach.
Yeah.
And I thought the same thing as I'm like, man, I hope there's nobody that skis out there. Of course they don't, but.
And then they bumped it up to shark cages, getting in the shark cage. Yeah. And then they got to swimming with them out of the shark cage. Well, on the new one I was watching the other day, they had built a new type of cage. This one's completely like, it looks like plexiglass, like plastic, but clear.
Is this where the guy's at the top, like at the top of the water, sitting in like a plexiglass block? Uh-huh. Okay, I know where you're going.
And I guess they're trying to see if the shark is still attracted to humans or whatever, because they got those special lines in them that detect electronic fields, and they think that the metal cages like throws them off a little. I don't know what they were trying to do. I missed the first half of the show. But anyways, they got this guy in this plexiglass cube and this shark comes swimming up. And of course it bumps the container. Mm-hmm. Probably didn't know it was there. Never seen nothing like that.
Couldn't see it. It's clear.
Swims around a little bit, bumps it a little bit harder.
Says, hey, what's up?
Swims around. You lose sight of it. And then all of a sudden it comes in like a torpedo. Breaks the thing, is inside with the guy trying to eat him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, listen, they're pressing the limits too much. Just like when people go to a national park like Yellowstone and they want to get a selfie with a bison or there's a bear nearby. You know what I mean? Like
they do seem like they're getting too comfortable.
That's what seems like
everybody's getting too comfortable with the Shark Week stuff.
Yeah, because
until something terrible. Did you see I saw the Jackass guys were back again. I haven't watched that one.
I haven't
seen
that.
But I saw that they were back. Well, apparently last year they did one or year before or whatnot. And a dude jumps and lands in the water, like trying to wakeboard or do something silly and lands. And one of them like bites his hand. And he had to have surgery and he can't make a fist and all
this. Yeah, that sounds awesome, right? Right?
And that's the first thing I thought of is I'm like, bro, it's getting, y'all are pressing your luck. Stop doing that.
You're toying with it. You ever see the guys that
use a camera. Just put the camera in the water. They got underwater drones. I've seen them use them. Just
You've been to plenty of rodeos and you see what happens when the clowns or the fighters tease the bull.
Yeah.
It works sometimes.
Well, you always
want to be. Sometimes it don't.
You want to be the barrel man. You want to be the man in the barrel. You don't want to be the actual bullfighter. There's a guy that works the crowd that tells the jokes. Those are old bullfighters. Those are now the main guys, the barrel guys. The young dudes are and there's some of them are older that are still awesome. But the younger guys are the ones that are the bullfighter. But yeah, it never goes well for the bullfighters after a while.
It's eventually going to get you.
Yes.
I mean, there's not a single one of them that hasn't been just stomped on, gored. They're missing a spleen or, you know.
I watch it. And in fact, what's funny enough is we have it on right now in studio. We have one of the Shark Weeks playing. I love like the idea of it and seeing the whole thing, but it does unnerve me because I'm like, why do y'all, don't we know enough? Leave them alone, man.
I'm sure if you go around Seal Island or whatever there in South Africa, the sharks are annoyed because these people have been jacking with them for like 8 years. They're like, what is the problem, bro? I'm out here trying. Do you like it when people mess with you when you're trying to eat?
Here's what I did learn. I learned that the deeper you go, the bigger the sharks get. Like they talked about it on one of them shows. And I'm like, oh, that answers it. Meg's at the bottom. Meg's down there. We know it now. Y'all just told us. Y'all told us without telling us. Meg's at the bottom.
I agree.
Right? I got you something else that you won't really enjoy as much as you like about knowing about the Megs at the bottom. Folks, we have covered before all the crazy sightings near the O'Hare Airport in Chicago that has to do with a winged humanoid. Well, now there's another. It's reported there in Bensonville, Illinois. This was back on July 28th, folks. Listen to this. They reported that a seventh flying humanoid encounter took place there. It took place July 16th of 2022 at midnight. All right. It says this. I was outside with my girlfriend enjoying the pool and drinking a few beers at about midnight when we saw what looked like a large bat fly right over the top of the trees. Upon a closer look, it looked like a person with large bat wings and glowing red eyes. It must have been at least 30 feet above us and appeared to be gliding with the wings not moving, which is funny that we hear that often.
Yeah, very common.
It says we both saw it for about 5 to 7 seconds before we lost sight of it as it flew over the house. Now, we were first shocked till my girlfriend told me about the sightings of the large flying person seen all over Bensonville. We've never saw it again, and we were out there for another couple hours before going inside.
Mm. Again, though, not that the sighting isn't strange enough, because they are, but why do they keep happening in and around Chicago?
I do not know. I do not know why, and not just in, but close to Chicago O'Hare. Now, you remember when we discussed that, I found a story where a fellow was talking about working there.
Mm-hmm.
And said that it's common knowledge between a lot of the workers there that, in the vicinity on that airport that know about all the crazy stuff that happened.
Well, and in Chicago, there's two airports, Midway and then O'Hare. And don't forget, a couple of years ago, they had that UFO sighting there in Chicago at the airport. And you could hear the people talking and guys down on the runway.
Yep. And you remember that those stories talk about those people. It's the people around that area just know it.
It's so cool.
It's wild. Why is it happening there?
I don't know, but we need to go. We need to get up there and do some investigations.
Pump
we can
the brakes.
We can do it. No, we can write it off as a business expense.
I'm not going up there. I'm scared.
We can go to a Cubs game. We can go to Giordano's.
Okay, then I'm in. Let's go.
We can go to Shedd Aquarium.
Let's
we can go to the Navy Pier. It'll be awesome, man.
We'll do it. We'll go on a date.
Speaking of awesome, I just recently drove through Louisiana twice. Mm-hmm. One's going and one's coming back from Alabama, and. Very beautiful state. I've been there many times, but we had a listener write in with a story of his own, and he is, in fact, from Louisiana. He says, "Hey, Cam. Hey, Kyle. I wanted to share a story with you guys about an experience that my mom had when she was a young girl. My mom is in her 60s now, and as she recalls, she was about 7 years old at the time, so I'm estimating the story takes place in the mid-1960s. Now, she grew up near Bro Bridge, which is in southern Louisiana, right in the very heart of Cajun country. On this particular night, my grandfather, grandmother, and mom and her two younger siblings were out for a drive. They had stopped for a bite to eat and were on their way back home when my grandfather remembered he needed to make a quick stop to pick up something for a coworker. By the time they arrived at the home, it had started raining, so my grandfather told them that he wouldn't be long and they should stay in the car while he went inside to chat with his buddy. So there they were, sitting in the car, a steady rain falling outside, when something draws my grandmother's attention. They were parked next to an old oak tree, and there were branches, and in the branches they could see this light. It was small and gave off a yellowish-orange glow. My mom remembers it looking very much like the flame of a candle. My grandmother told the kids to look out the window, and as they do, a second flame appears from behind a branch. The two lights begin to dart around, twirling, bobbing, and occasionally bumping into each other as if they were dancing a fast waltz. At some point, the flames must have noticed they were being watched because they began to move closer to the car. My mom specifically remembers giggling with her younger siblings, my aunt and uncle, because they thought it was funny that these flames were somehow dancing in the rain. As the lights reached the car, they really started to put on a show, almost like they were showing off now, like they had an audience. The flames continued to fly around, twirling and occasionally bouncing right up against the car window. This whole time, the flames had been dancing closely next to one another, but then they slowly drew apart and then came quickly back together in a collision, creating a third flame. My mom said she stared in amazement, trying to figure out exactly what she was looking at. Even at the age of 7, she knew what she was witnessing was something truly amazing and definitely out of the ordinary. The light show continued for another 2 to 3 minutes, and then at some point, the playful dancing stopped. The three flames became still and hovered in a straight line. A few seconds later, they started to slowly move towards one another, eventually merging into a single, larger flame standing roughly 5 to 6 inches tall. It hovered motionless for a few seconds and then shot off past the old oak, straight into the wooded area that bordered the property. So that's her story, guys. I've heard it many times growing up, whether it's my mom or my grandmother telling it. The details haven't changed. Now, admittedly, my grandmother has told me some pretty wild tales over the years, but something about this particular story is special. And that's because my mom was there to witness it too, and recalls it just as vividly as my grandmother. I have no idea what they witnessed on that rainy Louisiana night. Searching online, the closest thing I've come across is the old European tale of the Will-O-the-Wisp. I've done a little research and found that many cultures have folklore that mentions something similar to wisps here in South Louisiana. We have our own version, known as the Fifolet or the Fufolet, according to our French folklore. The ghostly Fifolet flames typically is associated with mischief. These are the souls that have been sent back to do some sort of penance to make up for sins they committed while still living. A darker side of the legend describes them as the souls of children who have passed away before they were baptized and are now stuck in the in-between. Thanks for taking time to read this family story. I'm really curious to know if anyone out there has experienced anything similar to the Louisiana ghost flames. I absolutely love the podcast. Y'all do a phenomenal job, and I appreciate the time and effort you guys put into each and every episode. Your Cajun friend, Brian. Wow, Brian.
Woo!
You're right, though. It does remind me of some of the sightings of the Will-O-the-Wisps.
It does, yeah.
The dancing lights. And I kind of saw something similar. If you've been listening to the show long enough, you know I have one and one and only paranormal sighting in my entire life, and that was while I was deer hunting. And I still, to this day, don't know what it was. Slightly bigger than a volleyball, like the size of a beach ball. Green-looking orb. Not super bright, but visible. And I saw it moving across the field against the wind. And to this day, I don't know what it was. I don't know what I saw, but I could see how someone could describe it as like a green flame or something. It just looked really bizarre, right?
Sounds fey to me.
I don't know if it was swamp gas or ball lightning or all the other crazy explanations scientists have come up with. What I saw was not like a natural phenomenon. It wasn't something in Mother Nature.
Well,
but I don't know what it was.
You weren't the only one that saw it that night.
I didn't, not just that night, but someone I know had seen it before because.
And nobody, what's funny is none of y'all had ever talked about it until it was done. And then you're like, hold on.
I had seen it and I just, you know, I wasn't going to open my mouth. And then like weeks later, some other person was talking about it. I was like, wait a minute, you saw it too? And then, yeah, then turns out like me and two other hunters have seen it. And now my cousin just bought some land that's really close to that spot.
Yeah, like right down the road.
Yeah, like within a mile.
So we can go check that out again.
Insane, insane.
But it does sound fey, right?
It does.
Like that or your grandmother was a Creole witch, like something kind of had some awesome powers to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it sounds fey. And look, I can buy that down there. I mean, all through that area of Louisiana.
Yeah, I just don't want to run into the Rougarou.
Nope, I'm out right? on that.
But
too.
I got another cool story here. Now, this one is from a caller, a guy named Chris, who had a strange experience up in Oregon. Check this out.
Hi, my name's Chris, and you can go ahead and use this my name on the show. That's fine. So this happened in late spring in the year 2008 in Oregon. I was part of a herbal medicine workshop, and I was there with six other women. And so we had gone through our internship, and it was nearing the end of it, and we were granted a couple days off. So we decided to head over to the Redwoods to a place called Jedediah Smith State Park. So we had spent most of that day hiking around Stout Grove in the Redwoods, and we had decided we were going to camp in the Redwoods, but we made that decision kind of late, and we got in kind of late. I don't know what time it was. I'm guessing maybe around 10, but yeah, so we got in, and you know, it was a weekday, I remember, so there wasn't really that many people in the park. We had one other camper next to us, a guy by himself, had a white shirt on, sitting by a fire. I remember that clearly because of what I'm about to tell you. So we get there, and we decide, hey, you know, there's not that many people around. We're going to start playing music. So we start, you know, the guitars come out, the drums come out. We start playing music and goofing off, and I, you know, I guess we were getting a little rowdy. And as this is happening, I look at somebody else, and this woman standing across from me, and I see a pine cone hit her shoulder, just square hit her shoulder, and she looks at me with wide eyes, and then another one hit my foot, and she just. She's her eyes are wide, my eyes are wide. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Somebody out here, one of the other women say, hey, a pine cone just hit me too. And so there's pine cones just literally raining down on us. And I start going around to the edge of our campsite trying to figure out where these pine cones are coming from. And like I said, there was one camper and I'm staring at him. He's by the fire, not doing a single thing. No pine cones are going towards him, but the girls are still saying the pine cones are flying in at him. And so I'm running around the whole outside of the circle. I cannot tell where these pine cones are coming from. Really weird. I kind of understand what was going on now because of a lot of stories I've read about Sasquatch. But yeah, at the time I didn't know what to think. We eventually, the pine cones stopped. We decided that was our cue to go to sleep. So we all got into our tents. We went to sleep. And the next morning, what was interesting is one of the women, you know, I don't know how valid this is, but she was menstruating. And her tent had been peed on. And, you know, we're all just trying to figure out what's going on. And she's like, oh, my tent's been peed on. And then right then a park ranger walks up and says, you guys need to leave now. And, you know, at the time I'm just thinking, hey, you know, maybe we were too rowdy, maybe we were too loud, we upset somebody, so that's why we got to leave right away. But it just, something just didn't seem quite right. And, it was strange. You know, I've lived in Oregon for over 10 years, so I've had other experiences where I saw a tree shake, I found a footprint, but you know, after listening to many stories, I really kind of believe that was probably some Bigfoots that were not happy with us making all that noise at night. Well, what's so surprising to me is that park, you know, it's a known, well-known park for the redwoods, and people do frequent it. So to have them that close, if it was indeed them, I mean, I can't think of any other possible reasonable explanation. Yeah, maybe you guys can. Anyway, thank you. Talk to you later. Bye.
Very cool. Very cool. Thanks for calling that in. Maybe Bigfoot didn't like y'all, you know, making a lot of racket. I mean, you guys were playing music and just having a good time in the woods, and he was trying to tell y'all to get out. You're not wanted, you know? And I get it. Maybe it was like a crotchety old Sasquatch and like, these dang kids,
right.
You know, get out of here.
Gone now. Get.
Yeah. I don't know.
And wasn't it finding Bigfoot would go to the woods and make all kinds of racket and want to shoot fireworks and all that stuff. Maybe there is some backstory to it of maybe some crazy party, some old crotchety Bigfoots don't like it.
Yeah, maybe. But speaking of the woods and guardians of the woods, mm-hmm. Let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to be talking about some more fairy encounters. Stick with us. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. We're back with Expanded Perspectives. Yeah, we recently did an episode about the Fae folk, and a lot of people reached out and told us to do more, or sent me links to other sightings and things like that. So it is one of my favorite subjects to talk about, so I'm going to do a little more today. I know you got some more crazy leprechaun sightings.
Well, and I got something I want to share with you, too, that I had spoken to someone here recently that had it's what he describes as a trash bag dwindy, basically, sighting. So I met a fella working on one of these job sites, an arborist here in town. Well, not here. He's from out of town, but he was here doing some work, and started talking to him, and he ended up BSing for a good bit. We were talking about stuff going on. He's from California. He used to work out there, do a lot of landscaping and stuff out there. And so he was asking me, yeah, what do you do? And I told him about the podcast, and we were laughing about it. And he's like, yeah, you got anything crazy going on? And I told him one of my favorite new topics is the trash bag dwindies, right?
Yeah.
And told him how it all started and the whole deal. And he's like, man. So he's like, I don't believe it was him. I'm trying to remember. I don't believe it was him. I believe it was his brother. He said had a sighting similar to that when they were younger in California. But he said what it was is it looked like he described it as a large grocery sack is what he said. He and his little brother, and I forgot where they were at, but his little brother had this sighting, told him about it, but it looked like a grocery sack, he said, that had blown across the street or whatnot and stuck on a fence, like a chain link fence.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Just like you see trash blowing up on it the whole time. And he says that it went through the fence, like through one of the holes, almost like it turned to water.
Oh, wow.
So it sticks flat, and it's, you know, I'm assuming the way he was describing it, it's the size of like a beach ball or something flat, like a big pizza, right? Like a pizza.
Yeah.
And the way it hits, of course, it's not that perfect shape, but it's a bag. And it hits to the fence, sticks, and says it like morphs or pulls through one of the chain link holes, pulls through that completely, and then goes to tumbling.
Yeah, like imagine like a jellyfish, right?
Yeah, kind of like that.
It's something pulsing. Describes it as like waving, but and for it to go through the fence, it's like it has it's
had thought behind it to
yes,
do it.
Because yeah. If it was just a trash bag, it would have just stuck to the fence.
Yeah, and that's what was funny is, and I brought it up and told him, and then, you know, like I said, we go back and forth. He's like, "What are those?" And I tell a few stories and discuss it, and then that comes up. Of course, I don't think it was him. I think he said it was his brother's younger brother that saw it, but it was something along. But I do remember him saying, "Hey, look, it stuck." And then pulled through. So if anybody's got anything of like that, because it didn't take the shape, right? Like we talk about with them. It didn't take any shapes, nothing like that. It just stuck and with thought moved through a chain link fence and then continued on.
Yeah, but what is this thing? Is this like one of those biological entities that lives way up in the atmosphere and they're coming down? Is it something extraterrestrial? Is it some kind of time travel? Is
sentient it sentient plastic?
A spirit? You know, what is it?
Yeah.
We recently got a sighting. I'll talk about it probably on the next show, but I'll give you the cliff notes. He was out like walking his dog. He was in an area that wasn't heavily wooded, but there was like, you know, prairie land and some bushes here and there, and he saw this strange looking thing moving. He said he thought it was a black trash bag that you get like at a convenience store, not a full size like 15 gallon trash bag, you know, just like a little 3 or 4 gallon bag. He said he watched it. It was moving against the wind, and he slowly realized that it wasn't a trash bag, although he didn't know what it was, and it went into this bush. And he couldn't see it, and he was waiting for it to come out. It never came out. So he's like, well, he got his phone out. He's going to walk up there with his dog and see what that is that went in that bush. When he got to the bush, like a cottontail rabbit ran out. He started digging around in that bush. That whatever that mass was wasn't in there, but a rabbit come out. Mm. So he's thinking,
Fae.
It transformed into that rabbit, or it went into like a portal in that bush. You know, nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
And he said that he heard it on our show, us calling it Trash Bag Dwindy. Yeah. And he had to write it in. So
I've seen a video, and you've seen the video, and I'm trying to get the person now to find the video again because it's been for a long time. But you remember the Dr. Steppage video of whatever that thing was that's running on the other side of that fence?
Yes.
So this video was from back in the early 90s. A friend of ours took it. Dr. Steppage took it on a hunting lease, right, where they were hunting on the other side, and it looks like for the better explanation, if you've ever seen around construction that white plastic house wrap, and that house wrap gets like stuck in a fence and then it gets ratty as the tails strip out, it looks like that at quite some distance.
Mm-hmm.
Running It looks like this whole thing is running like a piece as big as a door, like it's the outline of something moving as it moves through mesquite trees and then like clears a fence and continues to move through mesquite trees. I remember then, like, what the hell is that? You know, nobody knows what this is. And, of course, it's old video camera footage from on your shoulder back in the day.
VHS tapes.
Yeah. So it's you can't make anything out, but otherwise it looks like that. So I always think of this stuff and then what brings about the Fae and then this just crazy encounters. But we're getting more and more stuff with all these trash bags or these like trash bag shapes or styles.
Dustbin Dementor is another name for it now, right?
Yes.
It's become famous because of Sarah's email. Yeah, when it comes to these strange sightings, I mean, one of my favorite things to talk about is the sightings of the Fae, mm-hmm. these little people, because they've been seen everywhere, all over the globe, many countries, but for some reason, they seem to really be seen the most in the UK or like Finland, Sweden, Norway. I don't know why, but that part of the world seems to have more than any other, Ireland especially. You know, but they've been seen in England and Wales, Scotland, but a lot of them are in Ireland. And these go back quite a ways. So I went into looking like when would some of the very earliest sightings of these things are. And that's another thing. People don't really know what Fae folk is because it's different to different people. I think it's based on your interpretation. Some people think of them as like these kind nature spirits who are looking out for the trees and the plants and the animals. Some people are the opposite. Some people think they're malicious and they're tricksters and they're trying to pull one over on you. You know, you've talked about it, never to accept food or candy or bread from these little people or bad things will happen to you. But I've read these stories and sightings where I remember one where a fairy offered up this guy and his friend like a loaf of bread, but the loaf of bread was like the size of a book of matches. So he like ate the whole loaf, woke up like 4 hours later, doesn't know what happened. And that's why these sightings are so cool, because I definitely don't want to have a run-in with a dog man or a rake or something, but a little person, like a little gnome, to me, that would be cool.
To see one, yes.
I've spoken to people in person who have seen them.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard about the Native American legends of the little people, the little hunters. You did a whole episode on little hunters. And how many times do people tell you that that's some of their favorite episodes?
Yeah.
Are the sightings of the little people over like Sasquatch and other things?
And what's odd is there's a lot of those sightings and a lot of stories that come from Southwest Texas down into Mexico, over in Arizona, all of these desert areas.
Right. Which makes you wonder, like, what are these things? Are these our ancestors? Have they been here far longer than humans have? Are they aliens? Are they from another dimension? What are they? And so I started looking back into some of the earliest reported sightings. And this first one, this is as far back as I could get, was from a guy named John Beaumont. And he published this in his book called Treatise of Spirits. And this happened in 1705. And he wrote some details about his encounters with various spirits. Now, this is what he said. He said, being of a brown complexion and about 3 foot in stature, they had both black, loose network gowns tied with a black sash about their middles. And within the network appeared a gown, of a golden color with somewhat of a light striking through it. Their heads were not dressed in top knots, but they had white linen caps on with lace on them. And over it, they had a black loose network of a hood. So these things were tiny, 3 foot tall. These are sometimes referred to as Dwendies. These are taller gnomes. Some of the little people are described as only like 8 inches tall, like the Indian in the cupboard. And then other ones are like 3 foot tall.
So Jawas.
Like Jawas. He said on one occasion, he saw them dance in a ring in his garden. And they would sing and they would be holding hands round, but not facing each other. But their backs turned to the inner part of the circle. He once asked them who they were, and they told him that they were an order of creatures superior to mankind and could influence our thoughts, and that their habitation was in the air. Now, this next witness was a well-respected 18th century cleric and one-time principal of the Independent Academy at Rotherham, and his name was Reverend Dr. Edward Williams. And he was born at Bafari, which is in Debbingshire, North Wales. Sorry if I'm butchering the pronunciation of these towns, folks. I, you know, I'm a Texan. You're going to have to let it go. And these events that he described in his book took place in 1757 when he was only 7 years old. He says, on a fine summer day, about midsummer, between the hours of 12 at noon and 1, my eldest sister and myself, our next neighbor's children, Barbara and Ann Evans, both older than myself, were in a field called Kay Khaled near their house, all innocently engaged at play by a hedge under a tree and not far from a still next to that house, while one of us observed on the middle of the field a company of, what shall I call them, beings, neither men nor women nor children, dancing with big and great briskness. They were full in view, less than 100 yards from us, consisting of about 7 or 8 couples. We could not well reckon them, owing to the briskness of the motions and the consternation with which we were struck at a sight so unusual. They were all clothed in red, a dress not unlike a military uniform, without hats, but their heads tied with handkerchiefs of a reddish color, sprigged or spotted with yellow, all uniform in this as in a habit, all tied behind with the corners hanging down their backs, and white handkerchiefs in their hands held loose by the corners. They appeared of a size somewhat less than our own, but more like dwarves than children. On the first discovery, we began with no small dread to question one another as to what they could be, as there were no soldiers in the country, nor was it the time for May dancers, and as they differed much from all the human beings we'd ever seen. Thus alarmed, we dropped our play, left our station, and made for the still. Still keeping our eyes upon them, we observed one of their company staring from the rest and making towards us with a running pace. I, being the youngest, was the last at the still, and though struck with an inexpressible panic, saw the grim elf just at my heels, having a full and clear thought, terrific view of him, with his ancient, swarthy, and grim complexion. I screamed out exceedingly. My sister also, our companions, set up a roar, and the former dragged me with violence over the still on which, at the instant I was disengaged from it, this warlike Lilliputian leaned and stretched himself after me, but came not over. With palpitating hearts and loud cries, we ran towards the house, alarmed the family, and told them of our trouble. The men instantly left their dinner, with whom, still trembling, we went to the place and made the most solicitous and diligent inquiry in all the neighborhood, both at that time and after, but never found the least vestige of any circumstance that could contribute to a solution of this remarkable phenomenon. So it's kind of hard to get through. That's just the way people wrote back then. But basically, these kids were chased by this, you know, dancing little gnome-like thing. And when they went inside and told the adults, like, the men kind of seemed like they knew what they were talking about, like they had seen.
They weren't surprised.
Not really.
That's never what you want. Like, when you talk to someone about Bigfoot or any of that stuff and they're nobody's surprised by it, you're like, oh, yeah, man, I should have listened to y'all.
It's like they knew what was going on. I don't know if they gathered and armed themselves. I could imagine people going out there with like a pitchfork or something because they know these things are could be potentially dangerous. I mean, and they seem, when it comes to fairy stories, a lot of times children see them.
Oh, so, yeah.
I mean, there's lots of sightings with men and women that are adults, but most of the time, it's little children, and I don't know why. We've talked about this before many times. Do children somehow have an ability to see things that adults don't? Like, is it because of their innocence? Is it because of their purity? Or do they have some kind of sixth sense that just kind of goes away as you become an adult? Because whether it's alien abduction or face sightings or Sasquatch, it seems like little kids see it more often than adults.
Anything
and
paranormal.
I don't know why. Check this one out. This one's from a man who was walking home one moonlit night in 1842 when he suddenly came across a group of fairies. He says there might be a dozen of them, the biggest about 3 feet high, and the small ones more like dolls. Their dresses sparkled as if with spangles, like the girls at the shows wear on their dresses. They were moving around hand in hand in a ring, again with the dancing ring, no noise came from them. They seemed light and shadowy, not like solid bodies. I passed on saying, "The Lord have mercy on me, but them must be fairies." And being alone, then on the path, over the field, could see them as plain as I do you. I looked after them when I got over the still, and they were still there, just the same, moving around and around. I ran home and called three women to come back with me to see them, but when we got to the place where they were all gone. I could not make out any particular things about their faces. I might be 40 yards from them, and I did not like to stop and stare at them. I was quite sober at the time. So again, with the dancing like fairy ring, what are they doing?
Yeah, but didn't he say he asked three women to come back?
Yeah.
And help him? Maybe that's a pickup line. Like, that's a good move, right? Like, hey, girls, y'all want to come see some fairies? Like, I found them out here in the woods. Like, back then, that's the best way because it's light, right?
Yeah.
There was no light unless you had, like, a lantern. You could really impress a girl if you had a big lantern. But now you got jumping around fairy lights. That's all that dude was doing, looking for a date.
Maybe, maybe. There was an author named W.Y. Evans Wentz who was collecting fairy lore in Ireland in, earlier this century when he was told by an old gentleman named Neil Colton, who was 73 years old at the time, about a sighting he had personally close to the shores of Lüderg in County Donegal. Again, I'm sorry if I'm butchering the pronunciation. And he said this probably took place around the middle of the 19th century. He said one day just before sunset in midsummer, again with the midsummer stuff, and I, a boy then, my brother and cousin and myself were gathering bilberries up by the rocks at the back of here when all at once we heard some music. We hurried around the blocks and there we were within a few hundred feet of six or eight of the gentlefolk. The fae folk, they were dancing. When they saw us, a little woman dressed in all red came running out from them and towards us, and she struck my cousin across the face with what seemed to be a green rush. I don't know what that is. We ran for home as hard as we could, and when my cousin reached the house, she fell dead. Father saddled a horse and went for Father Ryan. Now, Father Ryan arrived. He put a stole about his neck and began praying over my cousin and reading Psalms and striking her with the stole. And in that way, brought her back. He said if she had not caught hold of my brother, she would have been taken forever. So is this like a fae abduction that this priest and stuff somehow stopped? Again, we've heard of these stories where, you know, the Pukwudgie, the legends of the Pukwudgie up in New England, there's lots of sightings and stories of these are like fae folk that are troublemakers and they're trying to lure you in, right? So that they can, who knows, do what? No one seems to know. Is that what's going on here? Where they're trying to freaking, you know, abduct children?
I think they just like either being completely left alone or messing with folks, because there's so many, like we've talked about, there are so many variations of these fae encounters as we go through when we start talking about leprechauns and dwendies and brownies and gnomes, right? I mean, yeah. This just goes goblins and gremlins. We all have to assume that, you know, and they may not be, it's just the way we always are is compartmentalizing, but it may be that that's all the different versions. There could be 1,000 more that we don't know of which one, but each one seems to be different. Not all seem to be mischievous and evil, and not all seem to be right. Super loving and caring and light and fun, right? That's what's so weird is it's in an individual basis, much like human beings.
Yeah.
So it makes it feel more real to me when we discuss fae is because it seems like it's on a case-to-case basis. Sometimes you get a real ass fae guy, and then sometimes you get a cool one.
Yeah, and like they're often described as having the color red on for whatever reason. And some of them are little men. They've also seen little women. They can tell.
And they haven't changed their outfits, right? Like, that's what's funny. After all these years, they all still dress exactly the same.
Right.
Which might be the move. Once you got a good coat, why can't I just keep buying the same coat? Maybe those little gnomes and all that stuff are just like little dads.
Yeah, maybe.
Buying the same shoes, the same shirts.
And they like dancing. And I like how the story, they heard music. You hear that sometimes. Like, you hear this most lovely music. I think of, like, a harp, somebody playing, or dulcimer or something.
Like those garden gnome-looking things, right? You remember, I remember us covering this a while back, talking about red caps. The red caps were the evil versions of those little garden gnomes, right, remember? Because they talk about wearing different colored hats. So I guess it's like a gang. The red caps are just the evil ones with the little fangs and all that stuff.
Oh, I thought when you said gangs, I was thinking like how the different gangs, like the reds would be the bloods, right?
Oh, yeah, of the garden gnomes.
Yeah.
Maybe so. Maybe there are groups. And like I said, maybe that's why there's fewer. Maybe there was a fey war, or maybe they just have their own areas. Like we've discussed, some live in the woods, some live in the dunes, some live out in the deserts.
How cool would it be to sit there and watch a fey war?
Oh, that'd be wild.
Right, pretty cool. Moving into some more recent sightings.
Yeah.
This one took place like near 1945. This took place in a place called Dorset, and the guy's name was Mr. Lonsdale, and he said he saw little people dancing in a garden on the Branksome Park Estate in Bournemouth. He says, suddenly I was conscious of a movement on the edge of the lawn. I saw several little figures dressed in brown peering through the bushes. In a few seconds, a dozen or more small people about 2 feet in height in bright clothes with radiant faces ran onto the lawn. They started dancing and swaying about. This continued 4 or 5 minutes. They were frightened away by a servant who was bringing tea. So again, crazy. Check this one out. This is a Mr. E.J.A. Reynolds of London, who was evacuated to Horsham in Sussex during the war. This took place in 1948, and he says he was about 10 years old. He was staying there during the school summer holidays, and he described what he saw one moonlit night when setting out rabbit traps. He said, I decided to sit still and watch. Being young, I thought that the rabbits would come out and I could see them being trapped. As I sat still and waited, I suddenly realized that a small, hairy man had stepped out from a blackberry bush. He was no more than 18 inches high, and he was covered in hair. His face was bare, but it had a leathery look. The nose seemed sharp. I noticed it when it turned away in profile. It definitely had hands. Its arms seemed longer than a human being's. I did not notice his feet. It was definitely substantially, and I swear, real. It did not notice me. Or if it did, it did not show it. It turned and disappeared back into the blackberry bush. And when I told the couple I was staying with, they just laughed at me. Now, a few days later, Mr. Reynolds saw the creature again when traveling upstairs on a bus. Now, this was during the daytime. The first sighting happened at night. And in a different location, this took place in Horsham. He saw the little man. He said he saw a little man walking across the lawn in a large garden. Only a few years later, in June 1952, a Miss C. Woods saw a little old man 3 or 4 feet tall on Dartmoor in Devon. He wore a brown smock tied around his waist with a cord. His legs were covered in a brown material, and he wore a flat brown cap or had brown hair. Miss Woods was walking on Hayter with her son on a hot summer's day, and she went off alone, climbing up a stony path, where she saw a little man who seemed to be watching her. When she was 40 yards away, he turned and went behind a boulder. She fetched her son, and together they went back to look for the little man, but they found nothing. No little man, no hole, nowhere he could have hidden. So here's another thing, another sighting. This happened near St. Aspa in Debingshire, North Wales. This happened in 1961. A man apparently was walking his dog, and he had an eerie encounter with a little man, again, only 3 or 4 foot tall. The witness tapped his muddy walking stick several times at a metal road sign on which the little man appeared beside it, almost as if the tapping had summoned him, like a genie, you know? Mm-hmm. Or maybe he was displeased with the disturbance made by the man's tapping because the witness felt a malevolent air about this creature who had a very ugly brown face and was dressed all in green. The dog also felt ill at ease, for he growled and raised his hackles. The little man suddenly disappeared only after being there just a few minutes. I got more stories. Here's a 9-year-old boy who was bathing with his friends in the River Moy at Foxford, County Mayo. Now, this sighting place took place at the beginning of the century. The boy later graduated at Trinity College in Dublin and was an army officer in the First World War. On that hot summer's day, the boy was strolling home with a friend when he saw a little figure dodge behind a big boulder. Now, again, I want to bring up the boulders. For whatever reason, a lot of these sightings of the Fae are seen around hedges, they're seen in gardens, and they're seen around boulders. I don't know why. He says, going to look, they saw a little man about 4 foot tall, wearing a collarless black coat buttoned all the way up to his chin and a cap that covered his hair. He had a flat face and curly brown whiskers across his chin from ear to ear. He just stood there, grinning at us. But this did not calm the boys' fear. They ran away as fast as they could. Also, apparently unconcerned about finding himself close to a human being, I found another sighting of a 4.5 foot tall fairy seen by a 9-year-old girl living at Cranog near Boris in County Carlow, who went on a memorable November afternoon. They're out there fetching her father's cows home, is what she said she was doing. When she got off the field and was waiting for the cows to come through the gate, she saw a little man moving quickly in front of one of the cows. The beast tossed its head, whereupon the little man tapped it lightly on the nose with a switch of wood he was carrying. The girl saw that he had on a bright red coat, button all the way up, tight buff trousers, and a close-fitting black cap turned up at the front. As he came past her, almost touching, the fairy looked up at her, then stepped across the ditch and disappeared into a grassy bank, walking into the earth as though there was no barrier there, but only a door, which, of course, for him, there may have been. So she's, like, working these cattle. They're coming through a gate. He sees this little man walk in front of the cow and then, like, kind of whacks the cow on the nose, like, hey, I'm walking here, walks right by her.
And into the bank.
Ghosts her, just, like, gives her a grin and just walks in the woods and or a little the bank with grass and stuff, and it looks like he just walked through an invisible door. Like into another portal, like just.
They can see the things that we can't and they can pass through them. Right. Don't forget, there are a lot of missing people and people that go missing around granite fields.
I know.
Right around the boulders, the rocks. There's a lot of that happens. And not like, oh, they're down in it. They never find their remains.
Ever.
Yeah, they're just gone.
Check this one out. A guy named John Byrne, who was moving a large bush with a bulldozer in November of 1959, claims that he saw there a 3-foot-tall man that ran out from underneath it when he picked the bush up. Three other men who were present also saw him as he ran across the field and over a fence. Under the bushes, the men found a large flagstone, which appeared to be covering a hole. They tried to move the stone but could not shift it, even using gelenite, which failed to explode. Finally, the farmer removed his machinery and stopped the work on the site. So they were moving this big bush and they found like a dwelling where a little dude ran out.
That's crazy.
It says a few years earlier in 1951, a little man dressed in black was seen by two girls walking along a country lane in the county of Wicklow. When they first saw him, he was standing in the road close to an old thorn tree. He was looking at them. They stopped, amazed, and gazed back at him. They later described him as 2 to 3 feet tall, youngish looking, dressed in all black with a black cap. Realizing he must be a fairy, they opened a gate into the field and ran inside, closing the gate behind them before running across the field. Now, looking back, they couldn't see the little man, but they did notice something strange about the size and shape of a kitchen clock on the top of the gate. What this might have been is anyone's guess. So why would there be like a clock on top of the gate? I don't know. Mm-mm. Here's one that happened quite recently. This happened in early 1990. A 15-year-old named Brian Collins was on holiday in the Aran Islands off West Donegal. Now, while out walking early one morning, he saw not one but two little men fishing from a bank overlooking the sea. He says they were both about 3 foot tall. They were dressed in green. They had on brown boots. One had a gray beard and a flat hat. They were laughing and talking in Gaelic. And suddenly they jumped over the bank. When Brian went to look for them, they had gone, but they left a little pipe behind. He took it back to the house where he was staying. And he said he put it in a drawer and locked the drawer because he didn't want to lose it. When he went back later, opened the drawer, the pipe was gone. But he swears that he found this little pipe. These two little dudes are just sitting there fishing. So man, what are people seeing? How do you explain it?
The more I listen to these, and again, like all the time, but I was just thinking about it recently now. How many stories back then didn't get shared?
How many
sightings went on back then that never, we always talk about it now and with Bigfoot and all that, but think about face sightings. How many back then were never shared and had really good ones? Because like you get, you know, you get made fun of, or you used to, not so much now. It's way more accepted now to talk about these things because of shows like ours, and everybody else that does it has helped break that stigma down. But back then it was bad. Like you could, and I know, of course, we're not talking about back in like, you know, the early 1900s and things when everybody was going to seances and doing all this. We're talking about like in the 40s, right? And after the war. I don't imagine that was one of those things that everybody just forgave you of. It's like, oh man, I've been hanging out and seeing fairies and I've seen leprechauns. Like, I just don't think that's a thing. So I think of all the stories we don't have that could have led to more, you know, well, probably just more questions, well, but yeah, at least a little more understanding.
People seem to see them around livestock and stuff. I've heard of people finding their horses' manes braided.
Yep.
I know that some people have went as far as building a little house and leaving it in their garden, and they claim that they can tell something's coming and going, and their garden has grown better than it ever has before. Mm-hmm. Like, they leave little gifts. It's like they seem to be handy sometimes, and then there's the complete opposite stories where they seem dangerous.
Well, and in like we've talked about on the last show, you leave something out in case something's missing. You kind of ask for what it is, leave a little thimbleful of liquor out, and it'll show up. And it does make you wonder now, whenever you've misplaced your keys or something, because think about how small they are. They could easily hide around us now. There are raccoons, there's possums, there's all these things in cities now that people don't see, except every now and then, unless you're out at the right time. So it could easily be the exact same way with the Fae.
I agree. Well, let's take a break, folks. When we get back from the break, we can discuss more about small people, leprechauns, and Fae. Stick with us. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Back with Expanded Perspectives.
Wow.
I know that you love the stories, especially of like leprechauns seen at Costco and other places where these crazy leprechaun sightings have taken place. And again, I don't know if that's part of the same thing. Is there a secret Fae war going on between the good and the bad Fae? Is there things you can do to attract the good Fae but keep the bad ones away?
Probably.
I mean, I don't know. And you know, they go by lots of different names. Some of them are more like Tinkerbell, where they have wings. Mm-hmm. Some of them are more like the little monster off the cat's eye, where they look like a hideous little creature, you know. And some of them just look like a human being, just really tiny.
But what about like the gremlins? Remember all the gremlins from World War II stories?
Yeah, real sightings of gremlins.
Yes.
Like the movie was made because of those sightings.
Yes.
Guys flying in fighter planes and seeing them on the wings and monkey with electronics and stuff. Messing with bomb bay doors on larger planes like B-17s and stuff.
And then you have pixies.
Yeah.
And pixies are known to be shape shifters. So maybe it was pixies that look like trash bags that turn into jackrabbits or something like that. You know, there's, like we said, there are so many things that we've named. There's so many things in all of folklore, in Native American folklore and folklore from all other countries and all of these things that lead into it. you would think there has to be something to this.
Yeah.
And it feels right. Like there's certain things you just, like we always talk about Dog Man. Dog Man, it just feels wrong. And it probably feels wrong because it's dangerous, right? But with the Fae, just something about it.
Something about it.
I would love, that would probably be an interaction that I would truly like to have.
Yeah, I would love to have a Fae sighting.
Yeah, I'd like to see a Fae.
I wish they were in my garden. I'd leave them food all the time.
Maybe you just got to start putting in, like building little Fae houses.
Yeah, right. And that'll attract them.
Little Fae houses.
I have to look into how to attract them, right?
Yeah.
We got another listener story here. Check this out. This comes from a guy named Rob. He says, "Hi, guys. I've been listening to your podcast for a while now, and I think what you're doing is awesome."
Thanks, Rob.
"I love your format of just relating the stories. You skip a lot of the noise that's involved with other podcasts. So, thanks for what you do. Here's my story. When I was 18, I moved out of my parents' place and rented a small mobile home in my hometown of Pickens, which is in upstate South Carolina. This was in the summer of 1992. It was a hot summer that year. It generally gets into the 90s around here, and the tiny old mobile home didn't have any air conditioning. I think it was the end of July, and I had just gone to bed around 11 p.m., I naturally had the windows all open as it was hot as hell in that little trailer. I could take that when I was a kid, but I think it would probably kill me now if I had to live that way. Anyways, I had almost fallen asleep. As a matter of fact, I was in that place right between the awake and asleep mode, if you know what I mean, and I started to hear something down across the field that sounded like wings, like insect wings. Now, in the almost asleep state I was in, I first thought I was hearing a helicopter, but soon I realized that it wasn't that at all. It sounded like a huge cicada, if you know how one of those sounds when they fly. This sound got closer and closer until it was right outside my room. Now, I heard this thing approaching from about a half mile away and heard it clearly all the way up to just outside my room. Then it came through a solid wall into my bedroom, and I kid you not, the room went ice cold. Almost like a reflex, I grabbed the covers and pulled them up to my neck. It must have gone from 80 degrees to 40 degrees instantly. No joke. So this flapping wing sound flew in circles around the ceiling in my room while I laid there in terror with my eyes pinched shut. I never opened my eyes. It was like something told me not to open them. Well, this thing made a couple of circles and then swooped down in front of me, and I could feel it right in front of my face. It felt like we were face to face, and I felt like it wanted me to open my eyes, but I didn't. It stayed face to face with me for a couple of seconds and then flew back up into the opposite corner of the ceiling of my room. Then, the only way I can describe what it did next is a high-speed nosedive into my upper right thigh, and it went inside of me. My body went completely rigid. I was paralyzed with fear. I could feel that it wanted me to comply or give in somehow, but I resisted with everything I could muster. This went on for several seconds or minutes, for all I know, but I never gave in to it. After this happened for a time, it suddenly was back in my room and I could move again. It flew a couple more circles around the room, flew down the hallway, and disappeared. Now, naturally, I didn't sleep anymore that night, and I didn't sleep in that room for another year. Since this occurrence, I've never had that experience again. I did have several years of bouts with sleep paralysis, which I feel was sparked by this initial experience. But they were nothing like that first experience that I can't really explain. I wasn't dreaming or hallucinating. I was completely sober and in my right mind. It has taken years to get over this experience. Well, that's my personal experience. I hope you guys enjoy it. It was probably the scariest thing that's ever happened to me. Thanks for all you do. Feel free to do anything with this you please. My name is Rob, and you can use my name." Man, I don't know what happened.
Oh, wow.
A giant, mysterious, winged thing. He never got a look at it, because once it got in the room, but in July, it's 80-something degrees out. Mm-hmm. Instantly, as soon as it came in his room, he felt the temperature drop.
That
and then he just
crazy.
Pinched his eyes closed and didn't want to look, and he felt it. He could feel it. didn't want to open his eyes. I don't blame him because God knows what he would have saw.
No, yeah.
And then it went in him and he felt paralyzed while it was in there, trying to get him to comply, he said. I don't know what it would have happened. Was it trying to steal him? I mean, he suggested it could have been a demon, but what was it?
What was the Denzel Washington movie where he's got, you know, where it's by touch? I'm saying?
Right? I know exactly what you're saying.
Is that what was, whatever it was in, passed, and it had to bail out to find something else, and it tried to use him and couldn't?
Well, it very well could have been that.
Because there's nothing on this planet, aside from a giant snowball, that once it enters your room, drops the temperature like that. Yeah, that's crazy.
I agree.
I wished I had a couple of them right now in cages around rooms in my house to keep them all real cool. Man,
I wished I would have had a couple in cages a couple weeks ago when I didn't have any AC and I was cooking.
I'm going to put them balls.
Like in Django where they dig that hole and they put you down in it in the heat. I mean, that's what I felt like.
It just radiates once it gets in your house. You're just like, I just can't. There's no stopping it. Yeah. Hey, it's been rough and rocky around here. Also, big shout out. Oh, for everybody in Kentucky going through all those floods, all that stuff down through there, it is terrible, man.
It is terrible.
All the water, we wished we could take some off of y'all. But yeah, because between the floods over there, then we got wildfires and all the stuff around here. It's wild times. Everybody's struggling through it. Everybody's going through it, folks. We'll get through it. We always do. We'll all get through it.
Right. If you have any stories you'd like to share with me and Cam, please don't hesitate. Email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, or you can call into the show, 888-393-2783. Let's not forget about our sponsors. Right now, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. Just go to athleticgreens.com/expanded. Also, Trade, don't forget about them. Right now, Trade is offering new subscribers a total of $30 off your first order plus free shipping when you go to drinktrade.com/expanded. Cam, what do you got planned for the rest of your week?
I'm going to go grab my granddaughter. We're going to have her over the night. Going to get to hang out with her some. And then we've got D&D coming up.
Right on.
Otherwise, I'm painting.
Nice. I saw there's a new ice cream shop that just opened up.
Oh, really?
Right across from Pizza Place. I can't think of the name right now. You might have to take your granddaughter down there for some ice cream.
Check out some ice cream.
Right? Well, I hope everybody stays safe out there. Like Cam said, we'll get through it, folks. Before we get out of here, real quick, I just remember, don't forget, if you want to see me and Cam in person.
Yeah.
We're doing a live show at the Panther Island Brewery in Fort Worth on Friday, October 28th.
At 7 p.m.
7 p.m. Email us. Let us know if you're coming. Let us know who to look for.
Yeah.
You know, we can have a couple beers. We can shoot the bull and talk about stuff and all that stuff. But make your plans. If you've never been to Fort Worth, it's an awesome town. There's lots of stuff to see, lots of hotels. I can give you a whole lot
of good food. We could tell you all about the good food. And there's also what we're going to let y'all know is there's a lot of really weird, wild, interesting things you can visit while in the area, in the Metroplex. So you don't want to miss out. We're not the main draw. It's just going to be us telling stories, but you're going to get to meet some cool people that are going to be hanging out with us.
It's not going
to
be just me and Cam. We've got guest speakers. We got Lyle Blackburn.
He's going to hang out with us.
We got Mr. Nick Redfern.
Mr. Mike Mays.
Mr. Mike Mays. It's going to be a good time. So if you want something cool to do there towards Halloween, come on out to the first ever Expanded Perspectives live show there in Fort Worth, Texas. Till next time, folks, that's about all the time we have for this episode. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.